Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Good Monday morning, everyone out there. This is Pinder in the Morning without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Coming up in the next hour, we will do the draft lottery simulator. Getting a little bit more difficult to stomach with all this winning that this team is doing. Also, we have the Blue Jays report coming up, and we'll have a chat with Darren Haynes after the Flames pick up a win over the Montreal Canadiens last night. 4-1 is the final. It was Nicholas Backstrom getting the win. He looked okay. Like I said before, he makes 21 saves. I don't remember any of them. It was kind of an uneventful game, but here to break down everything that is the Calgary Flames, it is Darren Haynes. Darren, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Pretty good, Peter. How's your day going?
Oh, it's wonderful. Pinder is back. It's all is right in the world. You said to me on Friday after the Avalanche game, we were hanging out waiting for Bob Hartley to come down. You said, boy, just nothing can be normal with this team. And then last night happened in what was a relatively normal game, and I kind of forgot how boring normal was. That was just run-of-the-mill 4-1 hockey game.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how these guys are, you know, they're getting their second wind far too late. They can't get out of their own way now and picking up 1 point, 2 points, 2 points, 1 point. Suddenly they find themselves in 24th and nobody is really sure which direction they're going other than the fact that they probably won't be able to get to either destination that we originally thought they might end up at, whether it was in the top 16, what we thought at the beginning of the year, or in the bottom one or two, as we thought not that long ago.
Yeah, it's been... A lot of it has been, okay, this is fine, and that's great. I would rather they look like this than that Jets team that we saw or Montreal last night. But where was this earlier? Because it's not like they're doing any superhuman things. They're kind of playing the way we wanted them to play earlier in the season. Why hasn't this clicked until now?
It's a great question. You know, one of the guys that I think has been really good ever since middle November is Dougie Hamilton, and maybe he's kind of the poster child for what went wrong with this team in the first month, where I wasn't sure what kind of player they had picked up at the draft deadline. I thought, boy, this guy I thought would be a lot better. I remember I thought that a couple times throughout that first month. But Dougie Hamilton, another 3 assists last night, just about a week after he set a career high with 3 assists back at the Saddle Dome. I mean, he is, between Hamilton and Adam Brody and Giordano, with those three pieces on the blue line all going as they are going right now, it's stunning to understand how these guys aren't higher up in the standings, because that's a foundation on defense that not a lot of teams can throw out there. So I think, you know, it's they're gelling. Some of these guys are gelling. Hamilton's kind of fitting in now. Frolik and Backlund have this partnership going, and it's kind of all come together at the most meaningless of times, unfortunately, for this team.
Well, and I was thinking about this yesterday, and this is probably going to get me called a homer and whatnot, but you look at the team right now, and Giordano's hovering around 20 goals. Brody has been fantastic all year. Hamilton's setting career highs for assists in games. You have Monahan, who's going to get to close to 30 goals. You have Gaudreau, who's at a point per game. You have Colburn and Backlund, who are setting career bests for points. Why? I keep coming back to it. Why is this team where they're at when they have so many guys again having this career year thing?
Well, specialty teams were awful to start the year, and the penalty kill is getting a lot of notoriety right now because of its propensity to score shorthanded goals. But between shorthanded and penalty power play, those guys have been, respectively 29th and 30th, 30th and 30th, 28th and 29th. I mean, they've been at the bottom of both of those categories since November. So that's one thing. And goaltending, early in the season especially, and they got into that hole and they were never able to get out of it. And you just wonder how different this season may have played out, if they got good goaltending from the start. If this is Dougie Hamilton's year two versus year one and there wasn't that adjustment and on and on. So certainly October is looking like it will really be the major undoing of this team. especially the way they've been playing lately and the way they've played in December. And, you know, there's been very good spurts throughout the season. So it's really that hole that they dug themselves that's just like a 2-3-goal deficit in a hockey game. That bad October is just a hole that just became too big to dig out of.
You said good goaltending. Even league average goaltending gets this team at least closer to where they would have wanted to have been. But last night, it was not a bad goaltending performance from 38-year-old Nicholas Backstrom. We're not going to get to a point where people are, oh, well, maybe bring this guy back, are we?
I saw a couple last night, and I had to kind of stop the train right there. I mean, like, I was very unimpressed with that effort that the Montreal put in. Even when they had good scoring chances, they put pucks off the logos in the same style and same abilities that my Friday morning 7 a.m. hockey players that I play with play. I mean, I don't recall a lot of the old 10 bell saves, if you will. I mean, it was a lot of kind of wasted opportunities. They had, 10 shots late in the second period? Like, it took a while for the Habs to even get going. So, yeah, take nothing away from the performance Nicholas Backstrom had in what is his first start in 14 months, but he wasn't exactly under siege.
No, that's it. Like, again, congratulations to him. It's a cool story. Comes back 14 months, wins a hockey game, gets to play his former team a little bit later on this week. But of all of the saves he made, I honestly can't remember any of them. Like, I sat down, watched the whole game, was taking notes, all of that. Don't remember one save that he made. It was just a pretty poor performance from Montreal.
Yeah, and let's see Backstrom on Thursday night in Minnesota, where Minnesota has everything to play for,
right,
in contrast to Montreal and whatnot. So I look forward to that one, because I think that will be a more realistic test to where he might be at. And still, I mean, I don't think this guy could win 3 or 4 games the rest of the year. I don't think that changes anything. I don't think this team is looking for a 38, 39-year-old goaltender for next season. So it's a nice story. Good of him to get a win, to get rewarded for kind of coming over here after spending his entire NHL career in one city, coming over at this point in his career, and, kind of putting the work boots on and a couple weeks of practices. So it's a good story. Got in, got a win, may get a few here, but I don't think it's really changing anything in terms of this goaltending pitcher for next year.
Talking with Darren Haynes from Flames from 80feet.ca. The other goalie that's getting a shot tonight is Jonas Hiller. Last time Hiller got the call-in goal, there was outrage and pitchforks and torches. Why aren't you starting Ortio? Now that's not the case. Everyone's, okay, sure, give Hiller a try. He'll probably lose a game. We could use that here in the draft lottery. Have we seen enough from Ortio that it's cool now that he's not getting into every game?
I'm not really sure what the thinking is, to be quite honest. This is a puzzling one. Are you just rewarding him for being a good soldier? Is this a little bit of a tap from the management team saying, hey, I think maybe we should try Jonas Hiller in that game against Toronto? I mean, the Flames were just 5 points up on the Leafs going into last night's game, but now they're 7. It's surprising. I don't know. I don't think we should read anything into it. I don't think Ortio is shut down for the year by any means. I think Backstrom was owed starts. We knew that. That was part of the arrangement when he came here. I wouldn't be, when the Flames get back on the West Coast and get back home for kind of the out of this week, I would expect Ortio to get a bunch more starts. But for now, on this road trip anyway, it's Hiller and another start from Backstrom, as curious as that all is.
Well, when you're in a tank battle, you really need to put your worst foot forward, and the Flames are doing that in spades in goal. The team that's playing defense in front of him, or in front of whoever is in goal, there last night, no England, no Weidman, that's going to be the case for a while. And going back to the start of the year, no Chris Russell, that's obviously going to be the case for a while. And maybe this is going to come across as a shot to those guys, and maybe it is, but I thought the defense has looked better in the last little while than it has all season long. Is it just addition by subtraction, or why has the defense got better? Or am I just looking for positives in this dark, dark season?
No, I think that's fair. I mean, Tyler Weatherspoon was on the ice. This is game 9 last night, and he finally gave up an even strength goal. It's the first time all season. So, I mean, those guys, whether it's Weatherspoon, I've been really impressed by Joakim Pekka. And McLeod has been just fine as well. I don't think the drop-off is significant from the guys they're replacing. And that said, they're also at a time of year where you always have to put a bit of an asterisk when you're evaluating when you're playing with nothing on the line, with no pressure, you've basically been eliminated from playoff contention, they are easier games to play. Players will tell you that. Coach will tell you that. So you always have to kind of keep that in mind. You know, when Tyler Weatherspoon came up the first time 2 years ago, he played a lot. And he played a lot because Bo Hartley was quite frank. We were out of the playoffs. You know, the team was out of the playoffs, so you can play him, no problem. There's no pressure, and they played him a lot. And that's why he didn't play last year, is because Bob Hartley didn't trust him in games that were meaningful. So now we're back into the situation where the games aren't meaningful again, and they're playing those guys. So they're playing very good, and you can't take that away from them. But it also is a bit of a, I guess you have to kind of keep in mind that it is a little bit easier to play these games when you can go out there and the pressure is just off you.
Which brings us to Joe Colburn, who has now a career high in goals with 15 on the year. I have liked the way he has played recently. I have liked the way that Backlund has played recently. I have zero idea what to make of it, because Joe Colburn is going to be hovering around 20 goals this season, and I cannot wrap my head around that.
Yeah, Joe Colburn is really, for a guy that seems to take a lot of heat and a lot of flack, he's right up there on the team in scoring now with 15 goals. It's quite phenomenal. So do you look at it through that same lens and say, well, he's almost getting garbage points, if you will, late in the year? But, you know, he's still beating NHL goaltenders. It's still coming in the National Hockey League. So I think you have to, you know, kind of acknowledge it is what it is. Now, Lance Boma scored 16 goals last year, and we've seen that Lance Boma has not been able to score at nearly the same rate this year. So for Joe Colburn, you know, this is not going to get him paid as a 20-goal scorer. He's an RFA coming up again this year, so he's looking at a new deal. For Joe Colburn, he's going to need to do that a couple times, but certainly should you be encouraged, if you're a Flames fan, at what you're seeing out of Joe Colburn? Absolutely, because if he can show the ability to put up some points, to help out in the offense, given his, you know, kind of flexibility, you've seen him on right wing, you've seen him on left wing, you've seen him center, he plays the power play, you can slot him all over the place. I think there are places where he's better, and that's not necessarily in your top six, but his ability to jump up and play in that role, such as when he did with running on the flank with Backlund and Frolik for a while there, you know, those are versatile guys to have. Again, we had this conversation not long ago where he's the kind of the utility guys that you'd find in the National League of Baseball. You know, Colburn fits that to a T. Great guy in the dressing room as well. So I can see Colburn having a future with this team, especially given his strong close offensively.
Yeah, and again, I would much rather be having the conversation of, okay, what do we make of this strong finish when nothing matters, than the conversation they're having in other places where it's, boy, can't wait for this season to end because no one is trying anymore. So at least there's that, but it's still kind of tough to get a read on. I can't imagine tonight's going to clear anything up. Are you looking for anything in tonight's Leafs Flames Battle of the Titans?
Not in particular. No. Like, you know, you just let's see what happens. I mean, I think it's about the guys that are playing for jobs. It's the guys that are playing for, you're trying to slot themselves into next year's roster. So it's, you know, I'm always looking at guys like Colburn, guys like Josh Juris. Again, it's the young defensemen. Are they again going to be, you know, show that they should be on this team, not just in the minors waiting for a recall next year? Those are the things you kind of want to watch for.
And we will be watching for that from that game tonight. What can we watch for from Flames from 80feet.ca?
Well, just wrapped up something this morning that I think people find interesting, and it's a look at where Sean Monahan is at this point. 79 career goals, and he's 21 years old. Puts him in some pretty, prestigious company. It's pretty impressive what he's accomplished when you sit down and you look at it. So I dig into that and bring up some interesting comparables, especially draft class wise and where he's at in respect to guys that have been drafted either in his draft class or even the few draft class before. It's kind of amazing where he slots. Even if you go back three or four drafts, he's coming up on top five and guys that were drafted when he was still playing midget. So the start to his career has been really something else. And the comparable I bring up, and it is Jerome Iginla. And what has Jerome Iginla's reputation been that he's kind of carved over the last decade and a half as a guy that pretty much automatically scored 30 goals every year? What people forget about Jerome Iginla is not once in his first four seasons did he hit 30 goals. Well, Sean Monahan is, if he has a strong 11 games here, he's got 26 right now, he could make it two straight 30-goal seasons inside his first 3 years in the league. So a pretty, you can't take anything away from the start to his season. And as that, a high-profile RFA, just like Johnny Gaudreau, you wonder how much Monahan is going to get paid. And the more you look at it, I'm not sure the difference will be that much because you can't, like I said, take anything away from what he's done over these first three seasons.
Yeah, all the talk is about the Gaudreau contract right now, but that Monahan negotiation is certainly going to be an interesting one, too.
Absolutely. You may disagree or argue what his role may be in the future, and will Sam Bennett be the number one center? But that said, this is always going to be kind of a top six team. So whether it's a 1A, 1B at center, and whether he's the A or the B, I'm not sure that's going to really take away from his minutes, from his responsibilities. So yeah, it's between that and the Gaudreau, how close will they be contract wise? Very curious. I mean, this is going to be one real interesting summer.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be no shortage of things to talk about. We just have to get through these 11 games now. Darren, thanks for taking some time today. I really appreciate it.
All right, have a great day.
You as well. That is Darren Haynes. Again, the website is flamesfrom80feet.ca. Time for us to take a break. Before we do, just a reminder, it is the BT Hockey Classic presented by Shane Holmes. And the guys, us, will be live for the gold medal game at Winsport. Shane Holmes, building the finest crafted homes throughout Calgary and Airdrie, committed to giving back to the communities in which they live, build, work, and raise their family. Also, big thanks to Adrenaline Source for Sports, the official jersey supplier of the BT Hockey Classic. When we come back, we will get to your texts. We also have the draft lottery simulator coming up, but also the Blue Jays report. Off day today, but a lot of intriguing things happening in yesterday's game. We'll get to that coming up in a couple minutes here on Pinder in the Morning without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Half an hour to go until the top of the hour, then Jim Rome takes over. We have a busy day, and it starts a little bit earlier than we're used to with the Flames out east in the center of the universe. It is a 4:30 warm-up tonight, 5:30 puck drop, all of it here on Rogers Calgary Flames Hockey. It is the Flames taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Very important in the tank battle. We'll get to why in a bit with the draft lottery simulator. Another Toronto team that we actually like talking about is the Blue Jays. Here is their spring training report.
Sportsnet 960, the Blue Jays spring training continues. This is the latest from Florida with Peter Klein, Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
The Blue Jays spring training report brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Spring into Audi sales event is on. Get rates starting at 0.9% and credit up to $9,750 on select models. Offer valid until March 31st.
It is a rare spring off day for the Blue Jays at spring training today. This after a game yesterday. Marco Estrada getting into his first game action for the Blue Jays wasn't overly spectacular, but just kind of shaking the rust off as the Blue Jays pick up a 3-2 win over the Pittsburgh Pirates, helping out the cause in that win. A little bit of offense from the shortstop.
Tulowitzki rams a pitch deep left center field. Yes, sir. Let's admire that one. There she goes. A two-run home run for Troy Tulowitzki. The Blue Jays are in flight. They've tied the Bucks 2-2 as Troy hits his third.
He is one player who I am legitimately very excited to watch him play for a full season. Hoping it's a full season. If things fall apart, maybe it's not. But still, he has been the best shortstop in baseball for a while now. Obvious talent with the bat, was a huge influence with the glove. He didn't really fit in offensively with the Blue Jays when he came over last year, kind of never really got hit his stride. He hit the big home run against the Rangers in game three and had a couple key hits, but offensively never really got into that groove with the Blue Jays. But just the fact that he wasn't completely booting balls the way Jose Reyes was a huge upgrade. So you keep that glove along with the bat that he can bring. I'm really looking forward to a full season of Troy Tulowitzki, and Buck Martinez agrees with me.
I don't think the Toronto fans have really gotten a full grasp of how good Tulowitzki is.
That's the thing. Like he comes over, hits a home run, a couple home runs in his first game and all of this, and everyone was very happy. The glove was there, but the bat never really came into shape. The injury against the Yankees hurt that as well, hurt him too. And that's going to be a problem. He has been injury prone in the past, but I really think that even if 130 games, and he is a player that you are absolutely going to fall in love with on this team, makes a few great defensive plays, has a ton of power in that bat. Rocky guys kind of get a little bit of a bad rap because of the ballpark that they play in. I think that power is going to translate on the road as well. He is, again, I am very much looking forward to him. He kind of gets forgotten because you had Donaldson win the MVP, Bautista and Encarnacion have the contracts going on. Tulo's kind of that forgotten dude, but he is going to be, I think, an absolute beast for the Blue Jays this season. And he's going to have to be because the offense is obviously going to need to be very big. We're talking about the pitching staff, and even if Sanchez, if my dream comes true and Sanchez gets in the number two spot, this team isn't going to win games based on their pitching. They're going to need this offense to stay as deep as they are, and it's going to be a very big season for the Blue Jays because with the decisions they have to make with Bautista and Encarnacion, and no one talking about it, but Cecil's contract is up. Like they have quite a few decisions that they need to make. Ben Nicholson-Smith saying that this is kind of a turning point year for the franchise.
They really have to evaluate where they're going as a franchise, what kind of team they're going to have. Are they going to have enough pieces to surround guys like Bautista and Encarnacion with? And if not, they're going to have to move on without these guys. And at least the developments over the weekend tend to seem at least to push the needle a bit in that direction.
The developments that he's talking about is over the weekend in the Toronto Sun, I believe it was. Edwin Encarnacion is quoted as saying that the Blue Jays do not see Encarnacion in their long-term plans. And at the price that he's probably going to ask for, it's tough to argue with them. So this is why this is such a big year for this franchise, because say what you will about how deep this lineup is, this lineup without Bautista and Encarnacion looks quite different. So it'll be interesting where they're at the trade deadline. Do you make a move getting Encarnacion out of town? Do you make a move getting Bautista out of town? Or do you push your chips in the middle one more time with this elite level lineup? And where do you go from there with that? So this is a really, really pivotal season for the Blue Jays, and the course of this franchise could go because of the decisions they have to make and with the new group that is in. A lot of people are going to get on these two players for asking for the amount of money that they're going to ask for, but Ben Nicholson-Smith can kind of see where they're coming from.
I can see why Bautista isn't going to want to give any kind of a hometown discount, or why Encarnacion wouldn't settle for 2 years. That would be ridiculous for a 40 home run player to agree to a 2-year deal at this point. That would be selling himself short in a huge way, and I don't think that would be a good idea on his part.
That's the thing. We look at these from fans, and we try to look at what's best for the organization and stuff like that, and giving these guys monster contracts is not the way that you probably would want to run the franchise. On the other side, you can see why they're asking for this. Power is kind of limited in the game of baseball right now. Not to get too far into it, because I know people love fantasy sports talk, but was starting some fantasy baseball homework with with my draft coming up this weekend, and there's not a ton of power guys out there. You saw Chris Davis was still getting huge contracts, even though he had a down-ish season for him last year. Teams are going to spend a lot of money to get power bats in there, and these two guys, I think, are going to get quite a bit of money. So again, that makes this year all the more important because you don't know what this team is looking like a couple years down the road. The other main talking point for this team is the fifth starter spot. You get Gavin Floyd coming in. And again, I've been harping on it all spring that I want Aaron Sanchez to be the quote number five guy or the fifth guy in the rotation. I think he ends up being the second best starter on this team. But I don't think I've given enough credit to how good Gavin Floyd has been. His ERA is now hovering around 2. He strikes out a pair, gives up 4 hits in 4 1/3 against the Pirates yesterday. And they had Andrew McCutchen and Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco. So they had a few guys in there. And Floyd has actually looked pretty good. I think I've tried to ignore that a little bit because I so badly want Aaron Sanchez to be the number five guy in this staff that I kind of want Gavin Floyd to suck so that he just goes away and Aaron Sanchez can go into the rotation and we can all live happily ever after. But Gavin Floyd has pitched quite well. And I've said that it's going to be tough to tell Aaron Sanchez, hey, you've put in all this work in the offseason, but we're still going to put you in the bullpen, even though that's probably not where you want to be. It's not going to be an easy conversation if you have to have it with Gavin Floyd either. Hey, you've been out for a couple of years. You've shown in this spring that you still have at least a little bit of effective pitcher left in you, but we're going to go a different direction. I still think that's an easier conversation to have with a 30-something guy who's been a part of your organization for about a minute now than it is for a guy who has been kind of a staple of your development for a bit. And I still would rather go with Aaron Sanchez to start, Gavin Floyd starting the season in Buffalo. But dude's making a case for himself. He has really been quite impressive with the Blue Jays and has blown away my expectations. And I think I kind of need to balance that a little bit. Balance how good has he actually been over how good he has been compared to our expectations of him. But either way you look at it, he's been not bad so far. One guy who needs to step it up a little bit, Drew Hutchison, getting the start for the Blue Jays tomorrow when they take on the Detroit Tigers. That is an 11 o'clock start tomorrow. Another interesting one, Drew Hutchison. I think of the four guys who's battling for the number five spot in the rotation, he's fourth right now, and he is, I think, absolutely destined for Buffalo. Will and I talked about this on Sportsnet Saturday that you can hear most Saturdays from 5 to 7 here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Shameless plug. Even it's so big, they even brought Jay in to produce the last hour last week. That's how, doing big things.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank
you. You worked very hard. But we were talking about this on Saturday. Drew Hutchison is not at the point, I don't think, where, okay, not a starter, let's put him in the bullpen. Because I still think at some point there is at least between number two and number four starter stuff with this guy. The fastball has always been there. The problem was coming up, it seems like the way he pitches now, it seems like that fastball was able to get him out of trouble at times. And 94 looks great at single A and double A. 94 looks like batting practice in the majors, and you need that secondary stuff. I think he's working on that. I still want to see, I want to give this a couple more years before I'm saying, okay, this isn't working. Let's see you go in the bullpen. Because I think he can be a very effective bullpen guy. Just a little fastball slider guy. That works in the bullpen. That works very well in the bullpen. Mariano Rivera made a career as one of the best closers of all time based on one pitch. Very good pitch, but still based on one. Drew Hutchison could profile as a very good bullpen guy, but I still want to see how he fares as a starter. I don't know if that's going to be at the big league level, but we'll see how that goes when he takes on the Detroit Tigers tomorrow. It is an 11 o'clock start. It's a road game, so maybe seeing a few lesser of the Jays in that one. And that is your Blue Jays report. The spring training report goes every day, Monday to Friday, 9:25 and 1:25. It's brought to you by Glenn Moraudy, Sportsnet 960 The Fan, airing two of these a week. You hear clips from Ben Nicholson-Smith and Buck Martinez, as well as The Call. Tons of insiders covering this Blue Jays team. We'll hear from all of them. And it's, again, brought to you by Glenn Moraudy. Rhett Warner knows there's nothing like the rush of being behind the wheel of a brand new Audi Q7. What are you waiting for? Test one today. Visit glenmoreaudi.com. Here, Sportsnet 960 The Fan, your home for the Toronto Blue Jays. It is also your home for the draft lottery simulator that we do every week. We will do that coming up next and get a little bit more in depth on that game we saw last night and why it was so damn depressing for a couple of reasons. We'll talk about that when we come back here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a big one tonight. Worst team in the NHL, the Toronto Maple Leafs, taking on the now seventh worst team in the NHL, Calgary Flames. I'm actually more looking forward to this game than I was the Montreal game. We'll get into that one in a little bit. But before we get to that, I feel like we have to, it's a big one tonight for the tank battle. So the draft lottery simulator, just, it feels that much more important. So we're going to do it right here to start the segment over on futureconsiderations.ca. There have the draft lottery simulator. We do it once a day. Hit and start. Oh, it's not a good one. See, all this one, the Flames have a 7.5% chance of getting the top pick. And it has not helped our draft lottery simulations. So here we go. In at number three, the Edmonton Oilers.
No!
I know! Every time, no matter where they are, they're popping up in this. At least they drop a spot, but still. Jesse Puljujärvi going to the Oilers. In at number two, Patrick Laine is a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And number one, kind of coming out of nowhere in this one, the Ottawa Senators getting Austin Matthews. I would tolerate that. The other two are awful, especially Edmonton. The rest of the draft would shake out like Jacob Chychrun going to the Winnipeg Jets at number 4, Matthew Tkachuk to Columbus at 5. Remember how I said earlier last week it was nice seeing the Canucks getting a couple like nobodies? Now they're in at 6 getting Alex Nylander. This is where we're at in this tank battle, because the Flames keep winning, they're at 7, and they get this damn Clayton Keller kid who I keep having to beat up on every day, because the Flames keep drafting. I need to look into this guy. He is 5'10", 170 pounds, plays for the National Development Team. He was born in Swansea, Illinois. Oh, this is good. This will fit right in with what they've been talking. You know how a lot of the dialogue has been, you got to get bigger with this team, you need a little bit of nasty. His profile, a small but highly dynamic playmaker that is not afraid to go into the greasy areas for a scoring chance.
Got those.
Yeah, got a couple of them. So that's where we're at right now. You keep saying, oh, why do you guys want them to lose? You're being poor fans. Winning atmosphere. You don't want to get a losing mentality like Edmonton. Small but highly dynamic playmaker. Really lacking in the small, highly dynamic playmaker area. I'm sure Clayton Keller is a wonderful player. The guy's going to go on to score like 700 goals in the NHL and make me look like a complete ass. But so there you go. Draft lottery for today. The Oilers get 3rd. The Flames get 7th because this team keeps winning some crazy how. Last night, they beat the Montreal Canadiens 4-1. And I was saying I'm looking forward to this Toronto game more than I was looking forward to the Montreal game, because with Toronto, there's at least reasons to watch. There are some younger players on this team that we've heard about for a little bit, in part because the Toronto media is the Toronto media and we get it out here and yada yada yada. But I mean, also in part because we've seen these guys in World Juniors before and we've heard about them for a while. They're intriguing prospects. William Nylander, very much looking forward to seeing this young man play tonight. Always like watching Morgan Rielly play. So there are a few players on the Toronto Maple Leafs that I am genuinely curious to see how they play. Montreal last night, I didn't know who half the team was. I didn't care who the other half was. It was just with Toronto, this is the direction that they are going, and thus they are quite bad right now, but they were intentionally bad. You don't put Grabner and Mahalik on your first line with hopes of making the playoffs. They know what they are. But Montreal came into this season with playoff aspirations, and at the start of the year it was, hey, look, Carey Price is playing well, and they're scoring. There's no way you can stop Montreal. And now we are here with 11 games left in the regular season, and that sounds laughable that Montreal at one point was this unstoppable juggernaut, and it's just so depressing to watch this team that was a Hagelin crashing into Carey Price away from going to the Stanley Cup final a couple years ago to now. Oof. And it's so depressing seeing that team. And you look at it and it's like, we're talking about a lot of things here, but what the hell do you do in Montreal this offseason? Because we talked about it before. You have Subban, you have Price. You can't just waste those guys away by trying to rebuild this thing over again. And you don't really want to get rid of them to start a rebuild, because you have them, and once you get rid of them, you're going to be looking for them for the next decade. So they're in a real tough spot right now. I said before, roster construction is an issue. I still think it is. I still think coaching is the main problem in Montreal. I think that you have a coach that was looking at David Desharnais playing on the top line all season long and thinking, yeah, this is fine. Yeah, this is okay. We got this Galchenyuk guy who, I mean, realistically, maybe should have got more consideration for top spot in his draft, but go ahead and pick Neil Yakupov. And he has struggled at times. We've been very hard on him at times, but it looks like he's starting to have a breakout season this year. Should we reward him by putting him on the top line? Nah, let's keep David Desharnais there for a while. And there were a lot of other coaching decisions that went along with that that really frustrated me and would have frustrated me if I was a Montreal Canadiens fan. So just watching that game last night, knowing what Montreal has been in the past, knowing what they've gone through this season, it was just depressing. It was like looking behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz and seeing this old shriveled up guy trying to pretend to be this big knower of all and doer of all. It's a rough go in Montreal right now. But hey, get to see Frédéric Gauthier, see what he has. William Nylander, what is he going to be? Always like watching Nazem Kadri play, like Morgan Rielly, like Jake Gardner. few things that I want to see from this Leafs team tonight. So at least I'm kind of getting into this one a little bit more than I was with the Montreal game last night. Going to the text line at 960-960. Poor Clayton. I hope you have to interview him when the Flames draft him. Listen, if the Flames draft him, I will be disappointed. At the time of the draft, though, I'll probably resign myself to the fact that they're going to be drafting Clayton Keller, and I'm sure he's a very talented and very nice young man. But it's just when you see what the Flames could be at or around, it's just, ugh. You could have had these Austin Matthews, potential, not franchise changer, but franchise player for sure. Lane and Puljujarvi, the exact players that people have been wanting with this team for the last 3 years. Perfect on the right side beside Monahan and Gaudreau. And we're getting small but highly dynamic Clayton Keller. But if it's my job to interview him, I'll interview him and probably not mention that I made fun of the fact that I'm like 6 inches taller than he is.
I really hated you.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. We ran these simulations and we ended up with you and I cried myself to sleep the next day. Like I just hated it. I was really not a fan of your existence. Another text, Klein, it seems weird because the Flames were higher in the draft. That doesn't make sense. Anyway, it seems like the Flames were doing better in the draft when this simulator, yada, yada, yada. Anyway, wonder if Kadri is going to go after Gio again. That would be... I don't think so. That was just a weird thing. Nazem Kadri getting a little heated. I don't think he's going to do what he said when he did the little throat thing and the I'm going to kill you. I don't think that's going to happen. Another text. Go Flames, go. Let's get that 8th or 9th pick. We will still have 2 call-ups left. Are we ever going to use them? Hartley, I would guess, hardly plays them anyway. Give Gio and Brody 30 minutes a game. Obviously, a little bit of sarcasm in that one. And this is, again, what we saw with this team for a while, where they would get on these runs late, and you start to wonder, okay, what do they actually have here? And get out of a good draft position, and then you draft bad guys, and it's just, it's the same thing over and over again. And I'm not getting on this team for what, like, I'm doing it rather sarcastically. It's fine that we actually have things to talk about with them, because they're actually going out there and playing hard. But this is starting to get insane. And there is starting to become a little bit of, where was this before? Joe Colburn, Michael Backlund, where was this before? We keep singling these guys out, but Joe Colburn got a chance on the first line when they couldn't figure out who was going to play on the right side with those guys and did nothing with it. Michael Backlund went radio silent when the Flames kind of needed some big things. And it's great that they're playing together, or it's great that they're playing well now, and Backlund and Frolik look legitimately like a pretty good pair that you can put as either your top, as either your second line or as your third line next year, and that's all fine and dandy. But holy smokes, is this frustrating. There are a few upsides that I think can carry over into next season. I think the defensive play, you can carry that over. Like Darren Haynes said, I think Dougie Hamilton with a full year in this system and actually knowing, hey, I'm allowed to join the rush instead of being in Boston and having to stay back the whole time. I think there are legitimately good signs you can take from this, but holy hell, where was this before? So anyway, Jonas Hiller gets the call and goal tonight. That'll be awe-inspiring, won't it? If the Flames keep this up, they will pick 10th, not 7th. They can't help themselves. If we have a later pick, Pierre-Luc Dubois looks good, rated high by McKenzie. That's true. Like, we're getting on Clayton Keller quite a bit. There are a couple guys that intrigue you. I think he would be the only one, but that's the problem with this draft and where the Flames are currently hovering around, is that there are a couple tiers. We talked about this on Friday. There is the top tier, that's Austin Matthews. He is his own tier. There are the two Finns, and then there's the Nylander, Tkachuk, Chychrun area. You get beyond that, and there are a couple of guys who you kind of like, but otherwise, it's just a lot of, all right. And the Flames have enough, They need an Austin Matthews. Austin Matthews would be a perfect fit. Lane and Puljujärvi would be almost too perfect to handle with how this team is going. And I think that's why there's a bit of frustration, because now you have even Jacob Chychrun or Matthew Tkachuk, one of those guys. But then you get down to small, dynamic, talented, whatever the hell. And it's just, oh, we know we have that. So there's some frustration. Maybe I'm getting a bit too frustrated, but there's a little bit of frustration there. Anyway, it is the Flames and the Leafs. 4:30 warm-up, 5:30 puck drop. There's a few things to watch tonight. Looking forward to seeing this young Toronto team in action. And maybe, just maybe, they'll put a goal or six behind Jonas Hiller and we can get this losing thing going again. That's going to do it for the show today. Thanks for listening again, Rogers. Calgary Flames hockey starts with warm-up tonight at 4:30 here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Out of here.